Good evening. Come in, won't you? Why, what's the matter? Surely you're not nervous. Perhaps if you can't, if I tell you a story.
We are met to call from out of the past stories, strange and weird.
Tales of mystery and terror by radio's masters of the macabre.
Stories of the supernatural, the supernormal, dramatized by fact, the mystery, the unknown. We tell you this frankly. So if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these madmen, play, we urge you calmly, sincerely, to turn off your radio now.
Welcome back to The Horror. Thanks for joining me again this week. We'll hear from Beyond Midnight today. South African horror series aired from November 1st, 1968 to April 24th of 1970, produced 78 episodes in all. The story we'll hear today is titled Rupert Orange. This one aired January 9th, 1970.
Leslie, whatever became of Rupert? What do you mean, Rupert who? Rupert Orange, of course.
Whatever became of Rupert Orange? At every society party, in London, in New York, anywhere, such a question was once asked frequently. Now, not so often. Soon it will never be asked again, because people forget people. Public figures fade into insignificance. Great stars of the stage and screen are forgotten all too easily, and heroes we might owe our lives to could die in rags for all we care within a few short years of their exploits. Rupert Orange. Rupert Orange was no hero, of course. He starred on no stage, although he was at one time a familiar figure at London First Nights, and would never have dreamt of attending if a box had not been available. A box meant a beautiful woman, and whether the play was good or bad, the evening required food and wine at its end. Rupert Orange blazed like a comet for a few short, brilliant years. But when his name slipped from memory in the early 30s, there were precious few to mourn a man who had gone forever beyond midnight.
Biotech, the new soap and pre-wash powder, presents Beyond Midnight.
Don't stare, Colin. It's rude. Does my appearance surprise you?
No, Countess, not at all. You're looking remarkably... I think you look...
You're a liar. I received your letter. Why should you want to know about Rupert Orange?
I met him once or twice, Countess. He fascinated me. And I thought you, of all people... forgive me, but...
On one condition...
What?
You write nothing, you publish nothing, you say nothing until after my death. You understand?
All right.
Rupert Orange. He was the most beautiful man I have ever seen. That includes your film stars, too. Rupert Orange. Sometimes in the night, I wake up because I think I sleep on my... But it's only a dream. Only a dream.
The Countess de Volnay, whose notorious connection with Rupert Orange once filled the society pages of the newspapers and magazines of the world, died in New York a month ago. This is the story she told me. She swears it's true.
Rupert! Rupert!
And then, of course, then...
Rupert, I've got to talk to you. A few minutes, please. Important man.
My dear boy, have you met that little one, that little girl?
Listen, Rupert. Are you drunk?
Listen, old boy, I'll knock your blasted head off.
No, my blasted nothing off. Listen. News. I've got some news for you. You'd better know now.
No news is good news.
This isn't good news.
Then it's bad news, then.
It's bad news.
What?
I had it from Peter Starkey. He says Mrs. Annis is going to win.
Rubbish. The man is waiting. She
Mrs.
Can't.
Annis has engaged someone brilliant. Someone Starkey says your man won't be able to touch. He'll prove your aunt died lunatic.
Look, my aunt...
Starkey says you'd better muster all your resources now because he thinks you're going to lose.
Listen, my aunt died and she left me everything. Her entire estate. This contest is nonsense. Mrs. Annis is a fool. She hasn't a chance. She's only the wife of the year. Aunt Beryl didn't like her.
The court will decide that the old lady was unduly influenced. Starkey swears they'll decide
Rupert,
she was mad and...
Darling, come on!
Oh, shut up! She wasn't
Starkey,
mad. Starkey says they'll find her testament void.
Starkey says. He's only jealous because I didn't offer him the brief. I win hands down. My name's Rupert Orange. Who's Mrs. Annis?
Come and have a drink.
You'll find, dear boy, the people who inquire what's in a name are always people without a name themselves. Mrs. Annis will not win. Now, let's hear no more.
Unfortunately, the Moor takes little notice of names. Rupert Orange meant a lot to London's brightly lit places. He spent money on them, but he meant nothing to the law. In the case of the will of his late aunt, Rupert Orange lost. It was proven that the old lady had died insane, that she had been unduly influenced. Mrs. Annis and her husband leapt suddenly into great wealth. Orange, once his debts were paid, fell from opulence to poverty, and there is no worse fall than that. It hurts. It disgraces. You see, he never really worked, and was such a stranger to the phenomenon that he really had no idea how to go about it.
Amazing. One writes verses, articles, stories, and when one is an amateur and writing for pleasure, for fun, everyone swears they are magnificent, darling. Now I'm trying to do it for a living, trying to make my blasted pen a breadwinner. Nobody's remotely interested. I'll probably starve to death. I'm perfectly resigned to it.
And if what you tell me is true about all these editor fellows, I think...
So one of them the other day, I've been waiting for the best part of an hour.
I think you ought to forget about writing.
I've seen clever articles. Really clever. Better than half the muck one sees in the glossy magazines. I've got a paper on my wall with rejection slips. If my wall's damp, it'll probably all peel off again.
You better pull yourself together, Rupert.
The hilarious thing is, you know how many people cut me now? Rupert who? Merely because I can't throw cash around.
That'll be the making of you.
Don't talk like that, Clive. Nonsense. Poverty's disgusting. Has no value. Degrades. My only doubt about poverty is whether the rumor of poverty being good for one is put about by the rich to keep the poor from their doors, or whether the poor and rich tell the lie to give themselves some excuse for being and remaining alive. Poverty. Oh, God, I'm frightened. I really am. The other day I was actually hungry, you know that? And I really had to work out whether I could afford a meal or not.
Listen, stop feeling sorry for yourself. You've got to find work.
I will.
And if I can help in some ways, you do. You ain't got...
No, I don't like borrowing.
Well, I mean...
No, something's going to happen. Something will turn up.
You'll see. Something did turn up, too. Although it would have been better if Rupert Orange had never walked on the embankment that night. Along by the river. By the fairground near the Black River. It would have been better if Rupert Orange had never been born.
Don't like fairgrounds then, eh?
I beg your pardon?
Noisy, eh?
Yes. Good evening.
Walk a while with you, if you don't mind.
If you wish. Rupert was content to have the old fellow tag along. They walked in silence for a mile or so. With a kind of man, one that's never done anything in the world and never will do anything, a certain kind of man who believes that distant relations and even total strangers are apt at any moment to fling fortunes into their hands. Rupert Orange was like that. They wandered up to the West End. The two of them stood for a while watching the crowds pouring out of the theatres. The well-dressed, well-fed crowds, hailing taxis, making plans, waste meetings, bridge parties, holidays. The First World War was well over, and the Second was still well round the corner. The world seemed good, but not to Orange.
Yes, yes. Believe you're crying, aren't you? Here, come here. Hot drink's what you need. Feel the cold, I've no doubt. Yes, cold. He's cold. Yes. Here, come on.
Yes.
Upset about something, aren't you? Upset about something, yes. Here you were. Wealth. Wealth. The only thing worth striving for in this world. The only thing worth striving for. Your tub philosophers may laugh at it, they may laugh at it, but they only laugh to keep envy and desire away.
Yes. Did any man you call a genius arrive at the biggest and best hotel in London tonight? And let a millionaire arrive at the same moment? And I bet you the millionaire gets the attention every time.
The millionaire every time. Yes. Millionaire.
I agree with you, my friend. Money counts for a great deal.
Great deal. Great deal. Two more hot teas, if you please. Well, what have you got instead, eh? Music? Art? Go into any studio tomorrow and ask the artist who he'll see first. You or the man with a check in his hand. If a poor man has the brains of Will Shakespeare and is splashed with mud from a motor car driven by a wealthy woman, the only answer to his protest would be a policeman's move on. Yes.
I know. 50 times better than you, I know. It's worse for me because I want new wealth. I want... But not anymore.
Poor man. Brains of Shakespeare. Mud. Splashed. Thank you. Yes, brains of Shakespeare. But
I'd sell my whole life now for 1 year's perfect enjoyment of real...
What?
I said I'd sell...
I heard you. Oh. Not 1 year, though. 5 years.
Hmm?
5 years. Think of the glory of it. This evening, a despised pauper. Tomorrow, a rich man. Take courage, make up your mind to yield your life at the end of 5 years in exchange for riches.
What are you talking about?
Isn't it plain? Isn't it clear? I promise, I pledge you, that tomorrow morning you should be in as sound a financial position as any man in London.
No one here can love or understand. What are the stories they all have?
And what do you want from me after 5 years?
Life. Your soul.
How did you know my name?
Make up your mind, you see? Brain of Shakespeare. Ah, splashed with mud. Ooh, mud.
You're mad.
Ah.
Aren't you? This is a joke. You're joking.
Not unless you think it's funny.
On my leg.
5 years. Make up your mind.
Who are you?
Ah. This evening, pauper. Tomorrow?
I thought you didn't listen. Anyway, how'd I... You don't want cash or anything, do you?
Just your word, spoken quietly, in full knowledge of what you are doing.
What would I be doing?
Selling your soul.
Like Faustus and all that sort of thing? Oh, really?
Stay where you are. In the gutter.
No, wait a minute. Just wait. All right. 5 years. All right. You have queer eyes. Queer. You look...
5 years. No more.
It's a lifetime.
A short one.
What do I...
You will say...
What have I done, old man?
I think you know.
If you were real, I know. If you were to be believed, I know.
There is one more word. Health. What use is wealth if you are to drop dead in 6 months or be knocked down by a passing motor car? You shall be free from any physical pain for 5 years.
I think I desire some slight ills, if only to recognize the very sweetness of life without them. Your hand. One moment. Money? Health? Listen. There is a woman alive in this city tonight who has brought me to the degradation you witness now. She flung me to the ground. She covered me with dust. She crushed me under a heel. Give it to me that I may lower her pride. Let me see her as abject and despised as the lowest trull that walks the streets.
Your taste is very unusual. But, yes, this will be.
That will be the sweetest part of the 5 years. Sweeter even than the wealth. Reality. Perhaps I should write the story of my meeting. When one third of London has electricity and the rest gas, I, Rupert Orange, have to make do with a candle. Oh, dear life. What it could be like if... The envelope lay just inside his door. It looked yellow in the candlelight.
Mr. Arendt, the estate of Henry Parsons of Falkenhauer, Georgia, the United States of America, has reached probate. If you will call at our Pine Street, London office at your earliest convenience, you will learn something to your advantage.
It makes you, Mr. Arendt, a dollar millionaire.
My dear boy, how are you? How was Europe? We didn't know when on earth you were coming back.
Darling, I simply cannot tell you how we missed that darn Mr. Orange when he was weird out.
Grotesque, really. Amid this social intercourse, Rupert decided on a meeting with Mrs. Annis. He left it for a few months. He enjoyed his new incredible wealth. It was not until an evening late in February that he took a cab to her house near Sloane Square.
My dear Rupert, how glad I am to see you. My dear, it's so long, I thought we were never going to see you again. But I'm so glad. And how very fortunate that the legacy was for you. I was quite delighted when I heard of it. And my husband, too. Oh, no.
I suppose there's not the slightest possibility of a flaw in the will.
Oh, no. I think it's all right. This time.
I see.
They stared at one another, these two people. The lady's heart began to throb. Her head started to whirl. This man she'd hated before all others, up until a few moments ago. And then another emotion had taken control of her. It was not love. It was not even admiration. It was a wild desire to abnegate herself, annihilate herself in the man who stood before her. To become his bondwoman, the slave of his controlling will. She drove the nails into her palms and made one desperate effort to escape. One desperate bid for victory.
I was just going to the opera when you arrived, Rupert. Won't you join me? Come to my box. Come to my box with me, Rupert.
I think not. Actually, the opera's a bit of a bore, isn't it?
There are some operas which are not bores, my dear Rupert. The opera image is extraordinarily beautiful and important.
Rupert! Rupert! They did not go to the opera that night. During the next few months, Rupert Orange saw Mrs. Ellis every day. She was completely besotted with him. She deceived her husband, and when that unfortunate man found her out and told her to leave his house, she went to Rupert Orange and begged him to allow her to stay with him forever. He refused her. He told her he didn't want to see her again. And she left. And within a year, the fortune that she'd once taken from him by law was now no more. Thus, Orange was revenged. He had, of course, no doubt that the bargain he'd made with the little old stranger was good. Money makes money. And soon he had so much money, he didn't know what to do with it. Every woman he wanted was his. Every country he visited brought him new, rich rewards. The world was his for the taking, and he took it. Rupert Orange was in the box of the Countess de Volney at Covent Garden when he first saw the devil.
Of course, Rupert, dear, although she looks a little... I mean, it's gone straight. This isn't in real life. Oh, my dear. I need to carry me as more in the world than... Rupert!
The devil had been leaning against the further wall of the box. It smiled at Orange and held up three fingers. 3 years left. I think I desire some slight ills, if only to recognize the very sweetness of life without them. And ills there were, but they were twisted to his advantage.
I mean, after all, you've got to hand it to old Rupert. I mean, my goodness, he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth, if ever anybody was. Did you hear about him at the hotel at Aix-les-Bains?
No, what happened?
He's at Aix-les-Bains and he has a broken ankle, you see. I mean, really. He's at this hotel and who should walk in but the Countess Gabrielle de Volney?
Oh, no!
My dear, yes. That's how it all started.
Good heavens.
Yes. Nothing at all seems to touch him. I mean, you remember the newspaper business about him in the... Oh, where was he?
Oh, yes, on Rivera.
In, on, my dear, what does matter? Anyway, this epidemic broke out, and there was a Rupert running hither and thither looking after the sick, I mean. Oh, he was such
He seemed immune from serious danger. Everything he touched turned into gold. He reveled in pleasure and radiated happiness. Until the fifth year. There were but 5 days to go when Orange, in search of solace, ventured into a London rainstorm on February the 28th. There was cash in his pockets, rich clothes upon his back, but his heart was like ice. London seemed strange, unfriendly. It was cold and alien, and he could find no one to speak with, no one to share his fears, until...
Bad day for a gentleman like you to be wandering about, isn't it? You fancy a drink, do you? You could get one at my place if you were mine. This way. Your coat, do. What's your poison? In America just now, of course, you wouldn't be allowed to accept the drink. I wouldn't be allowed to give you one. They've got prohibition over there. Prohibition! Stop it!
Susan Annis! What in heaven's name?
You in my home. You.
Home? This? Hovel.
Tom? Tommy?
Of all the women in London, I pick you.
Tommy!
I asked for this, prayed for this, to see you humiliated.
He'll have money, Tommy, a lot. Take it, and don't be gentle.
Frost covered the pavements of London. A drunken man who'd rarely enjoyed his night out stepped over a body lying half in the gutter without comprehending what it was. The gutter ran outside the house occupied by Mrs. Annis. The body was that of a man. He'd been thrown from the second floor. His pockets were empty. He was Rupert Orange, and he was dead. It was 5 years to the day since the meeting on the River Thames embankment.
Here I go, singing low. Bye. When somebody wakes me, you can see the
no one else can love and understand. Oh, but the stories they all have me. I make my bed and laugh and laugh, I'll arrive tonight.
The Midnight is presented every Friday night at 9:30 by Biotech, the new soak and pre-wash powder.
That's it for this episode of The Horror. If you want to hear more from Beyond Midnight, find more old-time radio, or anything else Relic Radio, just visit the website at relicradio.com. Find links to everything there, and a donate button if you'd like to help support it all. Thanks to those who have donated. That's how this is all made possible. And thanks for joining me today. I'll be back soon with another episode of The Horror. The Horror is produced by and for relicradio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.